to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Let's see. Today is August 2nd, 2026. We have our guest, Kathy Grindstaff, with us today. And since we haven't gotten our guest on the phone yet, we'll be talking about nothing momentarily. But free advertisement of the week goes out to our friend Robert Exter, who he's the magic behind making our free enterprise moments disappear from the show archives. He puts the show archives online for you. They're free to listen to. Oh, Dave's there. I'll stop maligning him. And anyway, he's a really good videographer. So if you live in the Reading area and you have an event coming up or you need photos or video or whatever. So Steve Hilton was here in Reading on Friday night. You can see the video at ShastaGOP.com. So it was a really good event, 250 people. We packed the house, could have sold more tickets, but it would have made the treasurer crazy, and we all know how that turns out. So it was great. Actually, he did a terrific job, and Robert got his remind me, Robert, like 30 minutes? 32 minutes, of course. Ask the guy who did it. 32-minute speech there, and so links you to his site at robertextra.com, but he's a super good artist. We've worked with him for years, and there's an interesting story about the Unabomber. It's on the website. You should look at it. It's like one of those, what? All right. So now I'm talking to Blue Streak. We're going to talk about marijuana today, so I should talk slower. Mm-hmm. Does it make people talk slower? Our guest is Dave Evans.
None other
than Dave G. Evans, Esquire. Senior counsel with Civil, C-I-V-E-L. That is Cannabis Industry Victims Educating Litigators. And he's in Flemington, New Jersey. Can't go wrong in New Jersey. They were my neighbors when I was a kid. Senior counsel for that who educates lawyers on how to make the marijuana industry accountable to their many victims. It's the one thing that really doesn't get discussed for the most part. We talk about all sorts of things, but not that.
Well, according to the marijuana people, there are no victims.
So, oh, God, I buried the lead.
There you go.
It's a good thing you were here, Kathy. What a dope. I'll put on my pointy hat and go sit in the corner. Attorneys who desire
no
more.
No pun intended.
Come on, there might have been a pun intended. Yeah, it's past noon, so we can, you know, we can move it at a faster pace. Otherwise, we'd have to apologize for taxing everyone's brain space. Attorneys who desire more information can contact Mr. Evans at seniorcounsel@civel.org. Needless to say, their website is civel.org. So before opening his law practice in 92, he was a research scientist and data analyst and at the epidemiology – darn it, I almost had it – services unit, Division of Alcoholism and Drug Abuse in New Jersey's Department of Health. So he didn't just, you know, go to law school and decide, oh, this would be snappy kind of cases to try. He has some background there. He analyzed legal and regulatory requirements regarding drug and alcohol abuse, research and data collection, courts, criminal justice, domestic violence, drug-free workplaces, juveniles, confidentiality, treatment, drug testing, AIDS, drug use forecasting, and discrimination.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Right? I know. I know. And some other stuff that we'll save for later. But anyway, we wanted him to do most of the explaining today. So with that chaotic beginning, Dave,
what's going on?
Bring it down.
Well, greetings from New Jersey.
Love our New Jersey.
I certainly sound like I'm very well qualified.
You do.
Okay. So what would you like to know?
Well, go ahead, Kathy. Kathy took a big breath, and then I cut her off. I was a faster big breather than she was.
So this is, believe me, Cam and I follow you religiously, just so you know.
Oh, good.
And it is Sunday.
One of the things that came up in our area, and a local city just happened to adopt new marijuana laws to allow dispensaries and grow houses. And it's a college town. What could go wrong?
Well, a lot could go wrong. we have a town in New Jersey called Highland Park, and the town wanted to use the town name to draw customers into the marijuana stores.
Of course they did. Highland
Park.
Right.
Literally, that's what they wanted to do. So in a town of 15,000 people, they put in 5 marijuana stores. We call them marijuana trafficking stores. They call them marijuana dispensaries.
Now, we call them dope stores here.
Yeah, pot shops.
Yeah. Right. So the good thing about Highland Park is it happens to be just right across the river from Rutgers University. Okay. So in the town, in the year that they put these stores in, DWIs, driving while intoxicated, arrests went up 56%. 56%
yeah.
in the year.
Yeah.
Okay. There were all kinds of problems with the town, with traffic, more police involvement. The town council, who about half of them are marijuana users,
of course,
decided to ignore all of that. One of them, when my grandson's in the back seat of the car, so he may chime in every once in a while. So anyway, one of the members of the town council was a professor of political science at Seton Hall University in New Jersey. And when I was testifying against this before the town council, he gave me the finger. So that's the kind of stuff that goes on in towns
yep.
that have decided to become, marijuana cartel centers. All kinds of other problems come in. There are higher arrest rate. There's disorderly persons. There is a high degree of high potency marijuana in these places, and that leads to psychosis, more emergency room visits, more problems in the schools. In this particular town, the school did not want to give us information about marijuana-involved incidents because they didn't want to upset the town council. People came into the town and sold marijuana when they were not licensed to do so at farm market things. And so forth. And the citizens complained to the police and said, look, if somebody's selling, high potency marijuana here, they don't have the license. The cops said, well, we've been told to just ignore it. And so they were allowed to sell this stuff without the police interfering, even though it was illegal under the state cannabis laws. So that's the kind of thing that happens when a town gets completely taken over by these marijuana stores. What we find nationally is that the high-potency marijuana, which is legal in New Jersey, when it comes to anything over 40% THC, the state of New Jersey has decided that once it gets to 40%, that you have to give a warning that it might cause psychosis. Okay. So I wrote them a letter and I said, look, give me the name of any other product in New Jersey that at any degree causes psychosis and allowed to be sold. And as far as they were concerned, 40% was okay. And of course, psychosis can be caused at any amount or potency
right.
of marijuana.
Right.
We now have marijuana being sold in these dispensaries that's 85, 90, 95% THC.
Right.
Which most states permit that. There's no limit on it at all. People are going from first use into psychosis, especially young people, a remarkable number of them commit suicide in very dramatic ways. They jump off bridges, they jump off buildings, they step out in front of cars. These are all from actual cases.
Right.
That's come to our attention. They walk in front of trains. One kid shot himself in the head in his family living room, and he died in his father's arms. Now, the reason that these kids have been committing suicide is because their parents have said, look, there's something wrong here with your use of marijuana. You're obviously becoming mentally ill. You know, we'd like to help you get off of it. And the kids are choosing suicide rather than getting off of the marijuana. You know, they, for some reason, several of these cases, the kids on their way home, one kid walked out in front of a highway, killed himself. Another one went in front of a train. Another one jumped off a balcony in New York City. Rather than get off the marijuana. Now, what is different about marijuana than any other addictive drug? First of all, marijuana is highly addictive. The National Institute on Drug Abuse says that about 30% of the young marijuana users develop cannabis addiction, and that's higher than any other substance. But what is different about marijuana, is that it really takes over the person's, spirit, their emotions, their interactions. The parents describe the process as their child using marijuana, and the parents might say, well, you know, good, they're not using alcohol. Then the family begins to see that they are losing their child. The child breaks off contact with the family, emotional engagement with the family. Kids that were high performers in school start going downhill. The parents point out that the marijuana might be involved. The child says, no way, it's just a plant. It couldn't be the marijuana. That's not the reason why I've given up football, why I've given up piano lessons, why I'm no longer interacting with the family. It couldn't be marijuana. Then mental illness starts coming in, depression, psychosis, schizophrenia, and then the child is not even in touch with reality. They lose the child, either because the child commits suicide or dies in an accident or becomes psychotic. And some of them, when they stop the marijuana, if they're lucky enough to get into treatment, the psychosis can be reversed. Sometimes takes a long time. There are families now that are struggling with psychotic kids who stopped marijuana and they're still having problems even months or years afterwards. So we don't see this with other drugs. You get off of another drug, usually within a month, a couple of months, you're starting to get your brains back, you're in touch with reality. Now, I think the reason this happens with marijuana is that we have cannabinoid receptors all over our body. And so the cannabinoids in marijuana plug in all over the body and the brain and really completely takes over. And I'll give you an example. I was at a FDA conference on marijuana where they were considering doing something about it. They haven't done anything about it yet, but they were considering it. And there were a lot of people from the marijuana industry there, and there was a guy sitting in front of me who looked like an old hippie, and he had on an old baseball hat, and he was kind of beat up looking, and the thing that was remarkable about him is he had on a fluorescent green cape, like Superman, that had a big marijuana flower.
I would have noticed that, too.
Yeah, right. And so I started talking to him, and I said, well, how long have you been using marijuana? He said, oh, about 50 years. Huh. And he said, you know, and it hasn't done anything to me.
I was just going to say, and you said, gee whiz, I can hardly tell.
Yeah, exactly, right. So that is typical of what goes on. They become so involved in it that it becomes their life. It becomes their spiritual
It's a religion.
Connection. It becomes their social relationships and so forth. You see this also when you go to legislative sessions. I remember I went to one in New Jersey, and before people knew who I was, I just started going around the room, and the room was packed with people. And I went around and started talking with them. Virtually everybody was not from New Jersey. They had come in, they'd been bused in, or they had come in. And you don't see that with any other legislative session. okay? So it really impresses the hell out of legislators to see a room full of people that want this stuff, but they're not told that most of them didn't even come from the state. So they get a lot of, advocates. These people feel justified in doing anything to promoting marijuana. They think it's okay to lie. They think it's okay to threaten people. All of us that have been involved publicly in the anti-marijuana movement have received physical threats.
Yeah.
And I've had to call the state police, for example, because I received a threat that I thought was pretty realistic, and I called the state police. I had them contact the person, threats to my children and so forth. And they feel that they can lie, and it's okay. I'll give you some examples of some rather public lies.
Hold that thought, Dave.
Yeah.
And we're going to come right back. We've got to take a quick break. Our guest is Dave Evans. You are listening to We the People. You can find all of this and send the show to your friends at wethepeopleradio.us. No pot shop that has it in there either. That's not going to cure your disease, despite claims to the contrary. Back to you, Dave Evans.
Okay, well, the other thing about the reason I'm going into all this is because you have to understand the social movement behind legalization. It's driven by, taken by it, and people who have a commercial financial interest in it. So, two examples of people lying. There was a woman named Angel Raich who brought a case before the U.S. Supreme Court to be able to use medical marijuana. And she got on the steps of the Supreme Court and cried about how she had an inoperable brain tumor and the only reason she's alive today is because of marijuana. Well, we had hired a private detective to look into her past. And she'd been involved in several pieces of litigation where she had used her medical conditions to gain advantage. Angel Raich was the fourth name that she has been using. One of the doctors who we got her medical records, which she had, put into public, said that she had a somatoform disorder. And so she would tell people she had this somatoform disorder. And she had this inoperable brain tumor. Well, it turned out it's true. She had an inoperable brain tumor. She had a brain tumor that there was no reason to operate on it. She'd been dying from it for 11 years. And it just was a benign tumor. There was no reason to operate on
it. Best brain tumor ever.
It turned out that a somatoform disorder is the modern term for being a hypochondriac. Okay, somebody that takes physical illnesses. So once we exposed this to New York Times, Angel disappeared. We never heard from her again. Another example, there was a medical marijuana demonstration in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and a guy sitting in a wheelchair, and we have photographs of all this, with a sign saying that he can't take pills. In other words, he has to use pot, and he's in a wheelchair. So anyway, the demonstration gets over with, everybody leaves. We had a guy that hung around anyway with a camera. And there was a miracle, a medical miracle, because this guy got up from the wheelchair and walked away. So there
was
something about
an intent.
It was a miracle that participating in this medical marijuana conference so powerful it cured him on the spot and he could walk away from the wheelchair.
Well, they can put that on their list of ailments that it cures now.
Well, yeah, and when they were putting a medical marijuana bill in the New Jersey legislature, there were two medical marijuana patients there who had no problem walking. They had diseases that had nothing to do with their ability to walk. But the sponsors of the legislation had them sit in wheelchairs and then wheeled them into the legislative chamber in wheelchairs when they didn't need to be in wheelchairs. So this is the kind of hokey-pokey stuff that's going on. And then you have the marijuana industry, which blatantly lies about their products. It says that they are healthy, that they are medicine, that they can help with pain. All of the studies that have looked at marijuana as a pain reliever say, sorry, it just doesn't work. The mega studies, all the studies that have been done, and they get legislation passed that lists a whole bunch of ailments for which there is no convincing medical research showing that marijuana helps with any of those conditions. For example, glaucoma, virtually all the states allow medical marijuana for glaucoma because there was a study years ago that showed that marijuana reduced intraocular pressure, which is something that glaucoma causes. The Glaucoma Society has said, do not use marijuana. It can cause you to have damage to your optic nerve because you lower the intraocular pressure and then it raises again, and that can damage your nerve. So it can actually cause you to become blind.
Terrific.
But that doesn't get to the legislatures. This false study does. Now, the reason it gets to the legislatures is because the marijuana industry has a lot of money. For example, Trulieve, which is the biggest medical marijuana company, I think probably in the world, and they're based in Florida, spent $140 million to get marijuana legalized in Florida, and it failed. We could only raise $20 million. So there's just so much money. Now, President Trump, and I have been a supporter of President Trump. I was part of the legal team on Trump's behalf during 2020, but he has now completely gone off the rails when it comes to marijuana. He is being influenced by a guy named Howard Kessler. Kessler says, well, you know, I had cancer, marijuana helped me, blah, 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 blah. He's also being influenced by Trulieve. Trulieve donated $750,000 to his inauguration party. They have donated, the other marijuana companies donated millions to the PAC that Trump supports. So Trump's now a supporter of medical marijuana. What Howard Kessler has neglected to tell the public is that he was diagnosed with cancer in 2024. We found out that he started a medical marijuana company 4 years before.
Yeah.
And he's selling the products that Trump is now promoting. Now, it gets even worse. They want to give cannabis products to people on Medicare. And they would be able to get up to $500 a year, which would be not paid for by Medicare, but paid for Medicare organizations. The cannabis products that they're promoting, the CBD product, first of all, has never been tested on anybody over the age of 55. And the one CBD product that's approved by the FDA for seizures causes problems with your liver. So you have to have your liver enzymes monitored while you're using this product. Okay, so they want to give it to old people. Now, who is more likely to have liver problems? Of course, elderly people. This is probably going to kill a lot of elderly people. And the head of the FDA, Markey, who just got fired by...
I'm pretty sure it was Malarkey. Was he in the Biden administration?
Yeah, he got fired by Trump after he issued a letter saying that when it came to this Medicare marijuana scheme, that the FDA was not going to ensure that these products were safe and effective. The normal rules that they applied to any medication, they were not going to apply. Okay? So they're giving stuff that's not been proven to be safe and effective, that damages livers, has never been tested on anybody over the age of 55, and There is clear evidence that this product, these products interfere with other prescription medications. For example, if you're on blood thinners, this can cause you to bleed more. And Trump is allowing this to be given to people on Medicare. They can be up to $500 of it a year. So guess who's going to get the money? There's 60 million people on Medicare. 14 million would be eligible for this stuff. So if 1 million of them sign up for it, that's 1 million times 500. That's $500 million that's going to go to companies like Trulieve and Howard Kessler's company.
No fraud there. No fraud there.
No, that's not a bad thing, right?
Outrageous, outrageous, irresponsible, corrupt.
But Dave,
and I'm using corrupt accurately. Yeah.
So what I notice and have noticed for years on this is the people, whether you're speaking to them, they're your neighbors or friends, or whether it's on the big stage, like with Trump or whatever, the one consistent thing is the people that are the easiest to kind of bamboozle on this are either people who support it, so they're marijuana users, and so they support
right.
it, or people who really have never used drugs and alcohol, don't know anything right. about it, and really just
right.
have no context, and think it's harmless
right.
because all their information comes from Cheech and Chong movies in the 70s.
Right.
Right.
Oh, that's exactly right. And look, I smoked pot in college back in the 60s, and, you know, what I smoked back then was 2 or 3% THC. And trust
and it was
me,
mandatory,
so
I got
stoned on it. I got stoned on it. Now it's the leaf, the smoking, is up to 40% THC.
Right.
And the edibles are 85-95%. It's a completely different drug.
And on and just for people who don't know, we have done about a million shows on this topic, which you've probably already noticed, but we've done a bunch of shows on the chemicals that are used
yes.
on this that do not come off. And they were really
right.
only that was really a small percentage back in the day because
yeah.
they just weren't into the level of production, and getting chemicals from China was a little bit difficult. I mean, things were just different.
Right.
So the chemical interaction, it's not just the marijuana itself, but people who are deluded into thinking this is a farm-to-table natural
yeah.
organic product.
Yeah. It's
so much better than pharmacy because there's no chemicals in it. I'm like, okay,
yeah,
back to people that are high or people who are uninformed.
Yeah.
Right. Well, in terms of the chemicals, first of all, the cannabis plant takes up heavy metals from the soil. So heavy metals are toxic to human beings. And they come into the plant products, okay? Now, a lot of these products advertise laboratory reports, so you can get off their website. Well, the laboratory reports are probably accurate, but they only tell you the level of THC or other cannabinoids. They do not tell you about contaminants. And if you do research on the contaminants, you'll find heavy metals, mercury, all kinds of things like that are toxic to people. Plus, the method of extracting CBD often uses butane, to extract it. And again, they don't give you any reports on contaminants that could be actually in the products. And a lot of these lab reports also turn out to be phony. There was a big problem in California.
Lying.
Where the labs were giving false reports
yeah.
on the THC levels, and the pot users got all ticked off because they've been using this stuff for 20 years, and nobody told them that they were ingesting toxic chemicals.
Right.
So there's just a lot of corruption going on with this. The medical, we just had hearings with the DEA about this. If the DEA judge is even halfway fair, he's going to declare this. As not having accepted medical use. Now, the problem is the DEA judge is a judge for the DEA. He works for the DEA. Even if he comes back saying, do not use this, the head of the DEA, who is supervised by the Attorney General, can overrule it. And the Attorney General right now, Todd Blanche, another corrupt individual, is probably going to overrule them and just say that we disagree with this and go ahead with it. Blanche issued an order back in April declaring that all marijuana coming from state medical marijuana programs is being rescheduled to Schedule 3 because it has accepted medical use, because it's being used medically in the states. And he came out and said that they did a review of all these medical marijuana programs, and they all had, and this is the word that was used, robust protections for public safety. Total BS.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay?
Yeah.
Total BS.
Yeah.
They have no idea. The medical marijuana programs are not medical at all. And we did our own independent analysis of 10 states across the United States. And if they're full of holes, they're not medical. Anybody can get medical marijuana. In California, if you've got a hangnail, you've got dandruff, you can get it.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
We sent an undercover person into a medical pot doctor in Plattsburgh, New York. I was the undercover guy, and I had been treated for a spinal cord injury and for cancer, and I had my medical records with me, okay? So I sat down in the doctor's office. He walked in and said, okay, we're going to get you your medical marijuana card today. I mean, he literally said that to me without even getting a word from me.
Wow.
Okay? Yeah. And I told him that I had a spinal cord injury, and I had my medical records, and didn't even ask me for them, and he said, okay, well, we'll put you down. You know, you had cancer, and he said, I have to put something down in addition to cancer, so I'm going to put down that you had post-traumatic stress syndrome. I said, doctor, I don't have post-traumatic stress syndrome. He said, well, was having cancer stressful? I said, yeah. He said, I'm going to put down post-traumatic stress syndrome. So he put it into a sworn state affidavit form that he had swear to, perjury. I take it to the pot store, and I sat down with a guy, and I said, well, Dr. So-and-so gave me this recommendation and said that I had post-traumatic stress syndrome. I do not have post-traumatic stress syndrome. The guy said, ah, don't worry about that. We give that diagnosis to everybody. We had a mom in here the other day that had stress with her kids. We
so
gave
apparently
her
that's top secret.
Syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I said, no, thanks. I didn't want to do anything fraudulent. I just walked out. I've got all this. I've had a transcript of this whole interaction. I had a microphone on me the whole time, and, you know, that was it. That was it. It was a complete fraudulent transaction. And the doctor gave me a slip for me to get a discount on the pot at the local pot store, which is illegal under New York law. And this is the kind of stuff that's going on. The states do not monitor this stuff.
No.
We've seen similar complaints like this in New Jersey. We filed complaints. We had a pot store there that had an advertisement where that had two teenage girls in it. And they were not girls that sort of looked like they could have been 18 or 20. There was no doubt these girls were 14, 15 years old. Okay? So we sent this to the state and said, doesn't look like a good thing to be doing under state law. So the guy looked at the photograph, and I swear to God, he sent back an email and said, well, what is the problem with this photograph?
Wow. But you know what? I can explain that. I know why he couldn't figure it out. It's because he's been smoking pot and he messed up his vision. Boom.
Probably, yeah. So
made sense of the whole thing.
They are not monitoring these things
no.
at all.
No.
There is a no. state association of state marijuana agencies that gave a presentation in North Carolina, and I have this. Be happy to send it to anybody. They admitted they have no idea what they're doing.
Nice. Hey, would you send that to me and I'll put it on the page for today? That'd be super handy.
Sure, yeah, yeah. They gave a PowerPoint, and they admitted that they're lacking scientific basis for a lot of the stuff that they've been saying. This hearing before the DEA judge, the evidence was overwhelming.
Hold that thought, Dave, because I want to do that all in one thing without interrupting.
Okay. Right.
But we do want to get into that because I don't know that people are following that and they think it's kind of a foregone conclusion. I'd like you to give them your take there. So this is a shout out to the chemicals that are being used. And so if you think pot is great, here you go. You can find all of this at wethepeopleradio.us. Yeah. Soundtrack for the DEA hearing. So, Dave? Tell us more about the DEA hearing, and maybe for people who didn't even know there was such a thing, what is the 411 there?
Okay, well, normally when the government changes a rule, they have to submit it to the administrative process. That means they have to publish a draft rule. It has to be open for a period of time for the public to look at it and comment on it. And then they may schedule a hearing to receive evidence about the rule. And then they will issue a final rule. And then if you disagree with the final rule, you can take it into the federal D.C. Court of Appeals. So where we're at right now with this process is that the Attorney General legalized medical marijuana on the state level. He did so in violation of the administrative process. He violated the law. And so we have taken him to federal court. Okay, so that's being litigated right now. The Medicare program also, we have taken that to federal court. We have filed a lawsuit, and we're going through the litigation process. Now, the other thing the Attorney General did is he said when it comes to non-medical marijuana, we'll have a hearing. So at the end of June, we started the hearing. We had an 11-day trial where we were able to present evidence. Now, the DEA, and by the way, this is disgraceful, forcing the DEA to have to do this. They have always been against rescheduling. The current head of the DEA has been against it. Pam Bondi, who got fired by Trump, was against it. And we heard that the reason she got fired was because she wouldn't legalize marijuana.
Needs no more introduction.
Yeah. So the hearing started off with the DEA presenting a witness from the Food and Drug Administration, who admitted, that the normal five-step process for determining medical use, had been, completed, and they had decided that marijuana did not meet the definition for medical use. However, under the Biden, Department of Health and Human Services, they got an order that they had to disregard their 30-year-old process for deciding accepted medical use, and they had to do a two-step process, they were ordered to do that. And the two-step process was designed so that marijuana would pass it. And that process is that there had to be people using it medically in the United States, and there had to be some medical evidence for it. So that means that clinical studies could be used, but not FDA-quality clinical studies, okay? So these could be slipshod, quack studies that they could use, and they were ordered to do it. And upon cross-examination, when he got finished, and he could have walked off the stand, this is after he admitted that he didn't pass the five-step process, he wanted to know if he could ask the judge a question. Everybody said fine. So then he went into a narrative that basically said, don't blame me for this. I was ordered to do this. And so the lawyer said, in other words, what you're saying is don't blame me for this mess. Okay. So the guy said, look, it's like the Nazis. Look, I was following orders. Okay. Don't blame me for this.
Terrific.
Okay. So yeah, that was great. It got even worse for them. Then they put in this pot doctor, who was supposed to testify about it being used medically around the country. He said, well, I only know about Vermont and New Hampshire. And he admitted that he makes recommendations for marijuana and then turns it over to the dispensary to decide the dose, the potency, the method of ingestion, and the time involved. And I said, but doctor, when I cross-examined, I said, aren't those medical decisions that should be made by a doctor? The dosage, the length of treatment, what product to use? And he said, well, I turn it over to the, in quotes, dispensary technician. Okay. Now, in other states, dispensary technicians are called bud tenders. They're usually marijuana users themselves, who talk about their personal experience with marijuana to these patients. Well, I went on the website of the one of the dispensaries that this doctor is responsible for, and I looked at the products, and they had names like Dante's Inferno, Blue Lobster, Girl Scout cookies. And so I said, "Doctor, tell me, for what medical condition would Blue Lobster be recommended for?" And he said, "Well, I don't know what you're talking about." And I said, "What about Girl Scout cookies and Dante's Inferno?" He did not know that these products, which could be used, and he admitted they could be used for medical as well as recreational, had those names. And I, you know, that he admitted that he leaves all these medical decisions to these bud tenders. So this is the kind of stuff that's going on all over the country. Okay? So he wasn't a very good witness for them. So then we ultimately presented a person from the DEA who came in as our witness. Now, this is a person, a doctor, who had been a prior DEA witness when they started this hearing back in 2024. The hearing got canceled, and then it got restarted. The DEA resisted us having this DEA employee come in as a witness, so we subpoenaed her. The court upheld the subpoena, and we brought her in. This was a doctor, a pharmacist physician, or doctor, PhD in pharmacy, who ran the evaluation unit in the DEA that provides the scientific information on drugs for the DEA, okay? And she said that there is no grounds under medical, accepted medical use for use of these products, okay? There was an 8-part test that they used to determine the scheduling. She said it does not meet the criteria for Schedule 3. They're trying to move it from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. It did not meet the 5-part test. It didn't meet any test. And she completely eviscerated everything that the president, the attorney general, the head of the DEA, and the DEA lawyers were saying. Okay? Completely destroyed their case. Okay? And I sent an email to the DEA lawyers, and I said, "Look, I'm an employment law lawyer. I know a whistleblower when I see one. If you do anything to this woman because she told the truth and acted ethically, I'm going to make sure she gets legal representation." She was a hero, okay? And you could see when she was asked questions that she knew was going to be damaging to the DEA, she would stop for about 30 seconds. And you could see her going through her head thinking, "Do I tell the truth or do I protect my career?" And she told the truth every single time. She was heroic, heroic. She stood up to the president, the attorney general, the head of the DEA, and all of the pot companies, okay? Then we had other people come in and testify. We had the leading doctor on medical marijuana in the entire world, Dr. Finn. He wrote the big, large treatise on medical marijuana, or he edited it. He completely destroyed their case, and it went on from there. Now, it gets even worse, because it turns out we had the Alcohol and Drug Testing Organization come in and testify. It turns out that under federal law, we can only do marijuana testing for Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 drugs. Now, what do I mean by marijuana testing? All of the Department of Transportation testing for people in safety-sensitive positions, okay, is governed by testing only for Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 drugs. If you use marijuana down to a Schedule 3, there is no longer legal authority for marijuana testing for airplane pilots, train engineers, school bus drivers, air traffic controllers, all kinds of safety personnel for pipelines, maritime, you name it. No more marijuana testing. That's it. It's over with. Now, the reason that we started this testing was because of the tremendous atrocities that were committed by people high on marijuana. Trains running into each other head to head. Because the drivers were stoned on pot, and other things like that. That's what started all the federal transportation testing, was because of marijuana. Hundreds of people were killed during those events. And that is not going to take place anymore. The administration has known about this for a couple of years, because when they first proposed this, the people in the transportation department went to them and said, hey, marijuana is going to stop testing. Do something about this. The administration knows about this. The White House knows about this, and they've done nothing to correct it. So what that means is that the marijuana companies do not want testing for marijuana anymore, and President Trump and the Attorney General are going along with that. Because they don't want testing for marijuana.
So do you foresee a huge potential liability for these employers?
Because, of course.
I mean, my God.
Of course, but not even a liability for the employers. What about all the people that are going to be killed?
Yep. Okay. Yeah.
In these train accidents, and do we really want school bus drivers to be able to be high on marijuana and not do anything about it?
So, but individual employers can't adopt rules that say, no, we are going to test for it.
They can do that. That's correct.
Okay.
But are they going to in all circumstances? We have some employers that have stopped testing for marijuana because of pressure from the marijuana industry, and also because they can't find employees that have not been using marijuana.
But then wouldn't they get also pressure from their insurance carriers saying, holy hell, we're not going to cover you if you're not testing?
You would think so. You would think so. But can we guarantee that in all circumstances?
No. Yeah.
Could we, do you want to get on an airplane or do you want a school bus? Have your kids put on a school bus where there's not? This is mandated testing. Okay. They're forced to do it. And they can then fire the employee. They can take their commercial driver's license away. With truck drivers, they may not be able to do that anymore because the testing is now illegal. And people that are tested can sue and say, well, you can't do this anymore. You're not allowed to test me anymore. And you can't blame me for this because my use of marijuana was completely legal, and it was okay by the Department of Transportation.
Besides that, I have hangnails and eczema, and I need it.
You're exactly right. Now, since they've had this marijuana testing in place, there has been no marijuana-related incident where there's been any kind of death. So it has stopped for 30 years, stopped. As soon as this testing was put in, and it's going to start up again.
Dang. Well, we're into the last 30 seconds of this hour, but we have you as our hostage. sounds like you're in your car, so I hope you have another hour of drive time. The rabbit hole goes deep, but at the very least, it kind of ends with money. What I'd like to know next hour from you is the mechanism of Schedule 3. It's the same as Tylenol with codeine. Now it's going to be prescribed by a kid at a dope store, so that makes no sense to me whatsoever because you can't even quantify the amount. So we're going to come right back and learn all about that with our guest, Dave Evans. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.